Experts claim there is nothing tougher than a diamond. But at Diamonds Direct, we beg to differ. Have you ever met a mother? Strong, radiant, timeless. This Mother's Day, give her the gift that meets her match. With diamond jewelry starting at $200, plus Diamonds Direct's exceptional quality and unbeatable everyday price, you're sure to give her a gift that wows this generation and the next to come. Experience the thrill of jewelry shopping done right at Diamonds Direct. Diamonds Direct. Your love, our passion.
Zeit Gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama, a new season of The Kardashians starring The Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello, the internet, and welcome to season 326, episode 2 of Der Daily Zeitgeist, a production of iHeartRadio. This is a podcast where we take a deep dive into America's shared consciousness, and it is Tuesday, February 27th, 2024.
Oh, yeah. What is that? That means it's Tuesday. We said 27th? Is that where we are?
That's right.
2724. It's Anosmia Awareness Day. It's National Retro Day, so I guess honor your see-through telephones and vinyl players. Mm-hmm. National Polar Bear Day, National Strawberry Day, National Kahlua Day. For all my Kahlua lovers out there, it's the day is yours. The day
the
is
White
yours.
Russian. Is Kahlua White Russian or no? That's Bailey's, right?
I think so. I don't know. It's just
mudslide.
Either way, it's just way too much sugar, and you will have a bad time if that's all you drink. So, yeah.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Well, my name's Jack O'Brien, a.k.a. Don't you wish your snack food were sweet like this? Mm. Don't you want more vague dissatisfying bliss? Don't you? That is courtesy of Cleo Universe, in reference to the fact that some of the greatest science of the late 20th century was spent focusing on how to get the perfect balance of mouthfeel and like enjoyment and dissatisfaction in nacho cheese Doritos. And yeah,
just gotta keep on popping them.
That's gotta make them keep popping. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That's who we are as a civilization, mm-hmm. unfortunately, at times. And I'm thrilled to be joined, as always, by my co-host, Mr. Miles Gray!
Miles Gray, a.k.a. Pass the Warren Bunderock hand side. Pass the Warren Bunderock hand side. And that is the reference to Senator Elizabeth Warren saying her dream blunt rotation was just to smoke with the Rock. And I... my body curled into itself, and I became a snail and drifted off into the sea. Yes, thank you to Lockeroni for that one, for letting us know. That's where you're going to pass the duchy, on the rock hand side.
On the rock hand side. Mm-hmm. I wonder what the Rock would be like high. I feel like probably pretty fun.
Because right? You know he's like simmering conservative underneath the surface.
So,
and like,
so not good.
It would just be like getting high with Joe Rogan. It's like, I feel like it's, you know, he'd say something weird and then being like, he'd probably like make an observation about your physique. He's like, yeah, dude. He's like, you're right-handed, huh?
Yeah.
I could tell, man, based on how your shoulder's built. And you're like, okay, dude, what is the fuck is going on? Please.
It's why no you're more. Off.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have some workout tips for you, unsolicited. Yeah, yeah.
Don't need that. Don't
Miles, need that. We are thrilled to be joined by the hosts of the Mystery AI Hype Theater 3000 podcast. It's Dr. Alex Hanna and Professor Emily M. Bender!
Hello.
Hello.
Wow, welcome.
Welcome to both of you.
Yeah.
In addition to being podcast hosts, the highest honor one can attain in our world. You both have some pretty impressive credits, so I just wanted to go through those as well up top. Emily, you are a linguist and professor at the University of Washington, where you are director of the Computational Linguistics Laboratory. Alex, you are director of research at the Distributed AI Research Institute. You're both widely published. You've both received a number of academic awards. You both have PhDs. What are you doing on our podcast?
How did you agree?
Our booker is really good. Shout out to super producer Victor, but this is, I don't know what's going on here.
Yeah, we're out of our depth.
We're excited to be here. And part of what's going on is that, you know, we're talking to the world about how AI, so-called AI, isn't all that.
Right.
And so a chance to have this conversation is really helpful and important.
We've been talking about that for a while, but your listening to your podcast really drove some things home. So I'm very excited about this conversation.
Every time we have, we've had Dr. Carrie McInerney on before, who I think has been on your show as well. Every time we pick Joao Sayoc out in New York, we're just always talking about our own evolution with how we felt about AI. Because before I was like, it's going to take all the writing jobs. And then people are like, it's not. And I'm like, how do you know? And they're like, here's some more information. I'm like, it's vaporware to make money. So it's always nice to it's always nice to kind of keep, pushing my own understanding along, because I also encounter, a lot of friends and family who also kind of have the same thing. They're still at the this stuff looks like it's going to change the world forever in a way we'll never know. And so it's always great to have the input of actual learned experts on the topic.
Expertise. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we're going to get into all of that. But before we do, we like to get to know our guests a little bit better by asking you, what is something from your search history that is revealing about who you guys are?
I have an exciting one. I can start. Hey, this is Alex. All right. Yeah, I'm building a chicken coop because my second job, or rather more one of my third jobs, is kind of being a little suburban farmer. And so I'm getting some chicks delivered from a hatchery, and they said, you need to put this directly into the brooder. And I'm like, what's a brooder? And I had looked up what a brooder is, and then came up and found that it can be anything from a Rubbermaid tub where you put the chickens while they're very small, until a repurposed rabbit hut. So then I started thinking all morning about how to build the chicken brooder. That's my search history.
And wait, it's like a pen, like a mini pen for the chicks to just kind of...
Yeah, it's like a little pen for the chicks, and you put in a heat lamp, because they need to be warm because they're small and they have only got that chicken fuzz. They don't have the chicken feathers.
This sounds like a job for a shoebox, but that's probably
too small.
Unfortunately, that's what they're getting if I'm building a chicken coop.
You can also
that's
use
what I got.
If you're in a rush, you can use your bathtub if you have one of those and put down some puppy pads.
Right.
Yeah, I learned a lot about this today as I was just waiting for another meeting to start and just read everything I could.
Nice. And of course, that chicken coop is going to come in handy, free eggs during the robot apocalypse, right? Which Sam Altman has told me is coming. So I have to assume that's also what you're thinking, right?
Right. But,
I mean,
she's prepping. She's prepping for the eventual demise.
Yeah, I think during COVID, I think there was a run on chicken eggs, and then so I'd go to Costco, and you couldn't get the gross of chicken eggs, and then I'd go, and I went to my backyard.
Sold them to your neighbors at a markup. Yeah. Got them for $8 an egg if you want them.
Yeah. They are still really expensive. Emily, how about you? What's something from your search history?
So I took a look, and it's a bunch of boring stuff. I can't be bothered to remember the website of a certain journal that I was interested in. So I'm searching the name of the journal. Mm. But then down below that, we've been watching For All Mankind, which is this alternate timeline thing that's what happens if the Soviets landed on the moon first kind of question. Mm-hmm. So it diverges in the 1960s, but it keeps referencing actual history. So my search history is full of okay, so when did the Vietnam War actually end?
Right.
And which Apollo mission did what? So it's a bunch of queries like that, sort of comparing what's in the show to actual history.
How does that line up based on your sort of cursory research as you watch the show?
So interestingly, there's a point where Ted Kennedy is like in the background being talked about not going to Chappaquiddick.
Oh.
And then an episode later, he's president.
Wow. Mm.
So there's, and I suspect there's way more of that kind of stuff that I'm not catching.
Right.
But just subtle things.
Right.
The media is like, and Ted Kennedy missed a barbecue this weekend in Chappaquiddick. That's super interesting. Yeah, this is, you know, third or fourth person who's mentioned For All Mankind to us. I think this is pushing it over the threshold to where I have to watch this damn thing.
It's enjoyable, but it's tense.
Yeah.
You know, anything where it's like people in outer space really creeps me out, because like that degree of like loneliness and sort of lack of fail safes.
Yeah.
You know, like when all the fail safes are there, are the ones that you built, and beyond that, you know, your SOL, that's creepy.
Yeah.
Seems uncomfortable, outer space.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What is something, Alex, that you think is underrated?
I was trying to think of something, and the only thing I could come up with this morning was the Nintendo Virtual Boy.
The red goggles on a tripod?
The red goggles on a tripod. And yeah, I know, you know, and whatever, 20 years later, 30 years later, I think at this point, you know, Apple has its Apple Vision Pro that looks pretty much the same, except you can walk around with it, right?
Right.
All I remember is that I really, really, really wanted a Nintendo Virtual Boy when I was 10 or however old I was in 1995. And, you know, but then I was reading the Wikipedia page and it kind of said, you know, it was giving people headaches and it was overpriced. But I'm going to stand by my claim that it is underrated. It was ahead of its time. And, you know, it was one of those products that completely, you know, and I don't know. I think, you know, if you could go back, maybe it was just, maybe, I don't know. I don't know what they could have done differently, but
yeah,
you know, that's all I got. It looked cool as hell.
Have you seen, okay, so I was the same way. Like, I used to subscribe to Nintendo Power, all that shit.
Totally.
I was such a nerdy game kid. And when, like, those ads for it, it was like, this is the future. It blew my mind. My parents obviously were like, that's a hell no from us.
Right.
You think you were going to buy
because
this
of how
you.
Silly you would look. We don't want to deal with you in public with that.
Yeah.
So it was also like a couple of grand, wasn't it? It was just ridiculously.
It was something, I think it was like a few, it was just something like more than like what a PlayStation cost, which was sort of like the height of it or something like. Anyway, I remember a kid in my school had one, brought it to school.
No.
And we lined up to play it. And it was the most underwhelming experience that like it broke me. Because I'm like, there's nothing VR about this. It's like lightly 3D. Everything I feel is like in this like monochromatic, like red scale kind of graphic thing. It just was really, it was underwhelming. But I completely follow the same path you had, Alex, of being like, this is, I need this.
This is the future. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, like that's so funny. I never even thought about the Vision Pro as being like the spiritual sequel.
Exactly. It's the direct descendant.
Yeah.
You know, the Nintendo Virtual Boy crawled so the Apple Vision Pro could run.
Right.
How about you, Emily? What is something you think is underrated?
So after listening to a couple of your episodes and like all the 90s nostalgia, I have to say Gen X. Gen X is underrated.
Yeah. The people I thought were the coolest.
We've got some monsters among us. You know, we've got
who
act.
Yeah.
Who among us doesn't?
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, Gen X, we're small, we're scrappy. I saw someone, a millennial that I know online, posting something about how weird it is to talk to Gen X folks about their internet experiences.
Right.
And I wrote back, like, don't cite the old magic to me.
Right. I was there when it was created. Although I feel like it's a bit meta, Emily, because I feel like Gen Xers are always going to say that they're underrated, like they're underappreciated. And it's kind of a class feature.
It's our whole identity.
Exactly.
It's our whole identity.
Right.
It is a referential. Yeah, it's a class feature of Gen Xers to say that they are unappreciated. And, you know, you children had to struggle with AOL dial-up. You know, how about this, you know, prior no internet or.
Yeah.
I mean, unless you had
Do you even know how to read a map?
Oh,
I do. As
don't
an elder millennial,
right
I do.
Now. Yeah. Yeah. I grew up in L.A. I know how to use a Thompson guide or a Thomas guide. That was our Google Maps before anything.
But yeah, before MapQuest, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But yeah, yeah. I think about too, like as like an older millennial, like Gen X were all the people I thought were the coolest people growing up. Like I'm like, oh man, this is like I want to be a hacker. I want to be like them. Where's my? Oh yeah. Well, hey, I don't know. What are we gonna say about ourselves as millennials? I wonder. I think we're just like we're just dead inside on some level that we're like, yeah, whatever. Cool.
We're dead inside and we killed everything, right?
The stock headline,
millennials are killing, you know, the napkin industry.
Right.
You know, but the avocado toast is going to be so good. Yeah.
Right. It's going to be amazing. We killed housing somehow because we spent too much on avocado toast.
Yes.
And, you know, turmeric lattes or whatever.
Those are good. I like turmeric lattes.
They are good, though.
Yeah.
Maybe even underrated.
Oh, okay.
There will be turmeric. People will be proposing to each other with rings made of turmeric and avocado instead of diamonds because you guys killed the diamond industry.
Our new currency, yes.
Yeah.
I mean, good riddance, though.
Yeah, but we always talk about that framing is just basically millennials can't afford X thing.
Right.
Like, we can't, we're not killing the diamond industry. We don't have money for diamond industry. We don't have money for these other things.
Millennials have this weird trend of living 5-2 an apartment because they love it.
Yeah.
Yeah. What, Alex, what's something you think is overrated?
Well, we're on the AI stuff. And so, you know, Emily and I are going to talk about parts of it, but image generators for sure. Text to image generators. I mean, people think they're very flashy, but I mean, it does a lot of copying. You know, I was giving a talk at a San Francisco Public Library with Carla Ortiz, who's a concept artist. And she had all these examples in which, you know, give it a prompt and it would literally just copy kind of a game art and then put it on the new thing and have some kind of squiggles around it.
Right.
So the stuff is just, I mean, and it's also, I mean, the kind of images, I think it's just this distinctive style that aesthetically, you, apart from all the problems with the stuff and the non-consensual use and the data theft and all the awful kinds of, you know, non-consensual deep fake porn and the kind of like far right imagery, like, the stuff is just ugly. Like it's got this, like every person in it just looks sunken. They look like they've just seen some shit. You know, they've got some shadows behind. Like it's
thousand
just really,
mile stare.
Just glassy, and you're just like, what is the appeal? You know, and so I just I don't like it.
Yeah,
it's not aesthetically pleasing.
So many things when people try and do like real life. Because I look at like the Midjourney subreddit on Reddit to see like what people are making. And that was sort of like my intro. I'm like, wow, these are like when people get the prompts right, it's interesting. They're like Simpsons, but real life characters. And also, but from a Korean drama. Like, you'd be like, okay, so we're getting the Korean, like the K-drama IRL Simpsons. But all the aesthetic, like all looks like it's like sort of like David LaChapelle's photography. It's weird. There's like this hyper stylized look to it that feels very specific. And I think the thing that interests me is sort of like, as someone who's terrible at visual art, it's like this way for someone with absolutely no talent in that area to be like, I summon this thing I'm thinking of. And you're like, fine, it's a bunch of copies. But like, I think that's the thing that most people are like, oh, cool.
Right. Like,
it made the thing.
It made the thing.
That it was made mediocre like art. I had the thought AI is like a doesn't matter generator, like Star Trek has the matter generator, and AI just like shits like out a bunch of stuff that doesn't matter, that's like uninspired, but it like matters to you for a split second. You know, it's like, oh, wow, that's weird that like that just came from a text prompt, but it actually doesn't matter in any long-term sense.
Right.
Yeah, that's I love that framing. I mean, what's that famous the image of the like the diner?
Yeah, the Nighthawks, is that what it's called?
Yeah. And someone had this great
terrible thread.
It was a troll thread though. Do you know what I'm talking about, Emily? There was like the Nighthawks, the image, and then someone was like, I thought it, like, look at this composition. It's so boring. What if they were happier? And it was kind of like a troll thread. I think it was like...
Was it a troll thread? I thought it was genuine. I thought that they were really saying, I'm making it better with AI.
Oh, no.
I think it was a troll thread. It's like, why are these people so sad? What if they were happy? What if it was daytime?
That's better.
Yeah. And it was sort of like that, like, you know, and I thought it was a troll thread. Maybe I'm granting posters like a little too much like grace here, but I think it was like the idea of like, I made it interesting. Look at this. Why is it so dark? Yeah.
Right. What if there was confetti?
Yeah, I know.
What if like a swagged out Pope was also sitting at that
guy? Right.
With a lightsaber.
Yeah, right.
Exactly.
Oh, so much swagged better
out now. Pope can liven up any image, but
the swagged out Pope did fool me though. I thought it was real, and then I was like, this is such a cool, like,
but again, it's not like ChatGPT was like, you know, it'd be funny. It was somebody was like, you know what would be funny, and gave that prompt to ChatGPT, and then
took a person.
You know, it ended up being. But like that's the thing that you guys talk about a lot, is just the erasure of like, people are like, well, and here's ChatGPT doing this thing, and it's like that somebody told it to do and then programmed it to do.
Right.
Like it's doing a specific it is not a person who is coming up with ideas.
It's like talking about like Picasso's paintbrush, but just as the paintbrush, like, look what the paintbrush did. Oh my God, dude.
Which is kind of cool and like wild. Zen. There's like a little like Buddhism there that I appreciate, but I feel like that's not where it's headed, unfortunately.
No. Yeah.
Emily, do you have something that you think is overrated?
Yeah. I mean, the short answer is large language models are overrated, but I think we're going to get into that.
We are.
Probably. So I'm going to shift to my secondary answer, which is actually to take a page from Alex's work to say that scale is overrepresented.
Mm.
That if the goal of taking something and scaling it to millions of people is like the thing, the only folks really benefiting from that are the capitalists behind it.
Yep.
Like,
right.
The product is worse. The impact on the societies or the communities that lost access to whatever their local solution was is worse, right?
Right.
So scale is this thing that so many people are chasing, especially in the Bay Area, but also up here in Seattle. And it's way overrated.
Say it all over, in every place. It's
everywhere.
You hear that all the time. I'm like,
How does about scale?
Make
how
line
do you
go
scale
up.
This?
Yeah.
I worked on a website that had like really was having really fast growth, and you know, it was just based on like publishing these three articles a day and really like focusing on making them as good as possible. And unfortunately, once it got a lot of attention, then the executives came in and their first question was, how do we scale this? How do we scale this though? Like, how do we get 100 articles a day? And that was like back in 2010, you know, but it's just been how capitalism thinks about this from the beginning.
Yeah.
And now they're doing it with movies. They're like, who needs movies now? I could make myself the star of Oppenheimer. It's like, why would you want to do what? Yeah.
Seems like you missed the point of that movie. But okay.
I want to be destroyer of world.
Oh, that makes me feel strong.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's take a quick break and we'll come back and get into it. We'll be right back.
You like to watch new stuff, right, Zygang? I know I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new. Because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump. Join Lisa and her hand-selected staff at Chateau Rosabelle, a glamorous estate in the French countryside, as they live, work, and play together 24/7. Vanderpump Villa is where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. And don't miss the new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course. And season 5 promises new horizons for the entire Kardashian clan. And if you're looking for steamy streams, check out Grand Cayman Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set on the tropical Caribbean island of Grand Cayman, where the rich come to play. But be warned, it's a small island. And secrets don't stay secret for long. So come check out what's new on Hulu this month. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
What up? I am Dramos, host of the Life as a Gringo podcast. Now, this is a show for the No Sabo kids, the 200%ers. Here we celebrate your otherness and embrace living in the gray area. If you ever felt like you were always too much this while also never being enough that, this is the podcast for you. Every Tuesday, I'll be bringing you conversations around personal growth, issues affecting the Latin community, and much more via my own personal stories, along with interviews with inspiring thought leaders from our community. Then, every Thursday, I'll be tackling trending stories and current events from our community that you need to know. So much of what makes our community so beautiful is our diversity, yet too often, those of us who don't fit into this dumb, stereotypical box of whatever it means to be Latino are left without a voice or just forgotten about. On this show, I celebrate the uniqueness of our culture and invite you to walk in your authenticity. Listen to Life as a Gringo as a part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots as I sit down with inspiring women like Misty Copeland, Brooke Shields, Vanessa Hudgens, and so many more. We dive into how these women made their pivot and their mindset shifts that happened as a result. It's a podcast about women, their stories, and how their pivot became their success. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back.
We're back.
And yeah, so as we mentioned, you know, we've done some episodes on AI, how there's a lot of hype around it. Your podcast really helped me understand just how much of the current AI craze is really hype. There's this one anecdote I just wanted to mention where a physicist who works for a car company was brought into a meeting to talk about hydraulic brakes. And one of the executives of the car company asked them if putting some AI in the brakes wouldn't help them operate more smoothly, which they're kind of confounded and were like, I guess that gets to the big question I have a lot of the time with AI hype in the media, which is, what do these people think AI is?
It's magic fairy dust, but you actually made it slightly more plausible by making it brakes. The story was pistons.
Pistons.
And,
okay.
And the engineer was like, it's metal. There's no circuits here.
Right. Yeah. But yeah, I mean, there are three kind of big ideas that I got a new perspective on from your show that I wanted to start with. The first one is kind of this distinction between limited and general intelligence, or like general AI, which is something that I've heard mentioned a lot in the past couple years in articles about ChatGPT. They're basically trying to use this as a distinction to say, look, we've known that computers can beat a chess master for a while now, but the distinction that we are trying to sell to you is that this one is different because it's a general intelligence. It can kind of reason its way into doing lots of things.
Yeah.
And one of the details I heard you point out on your show is that it's still pretty limited. Like, it's still basically doing a single thing pretty well, like the ChatGPT is. Can you talk about that? Like, what is it? Yeah. What is that distinction and how kind of imaginary it is?
Yeah. So before Alex goes off on chess as a thing in this, and we'll get there, Alex, you're right that ChatGPT does one thing well, but the one thing that it's doing well is coming up with plausible sequences of words.
Right.
The problem is that those plausible sequences of words can be on any topic. So it looks like it is doing well at playing trivia games and being a search engine and writing legal documents and giving medical diagnoses and the less you know about the stuff you're asking it, the more plausible and authoritative it sounds. But in fact, underlyingly, it's doing just one thing, predicting a plausible sequence of words.
Right.
Yeah. And the thing about chess is that it wasn't too long ago that general intelligence meant chess playing, you know? And so
yeah,
you had these, you know, during the Cold War, they would have these machines that could play chess. And then that was supposed to be a substitute for general AI. They thought that was general intelligence. And it was a big deal when, you know, IBM Watson beat Garry Kasparov and, you know, IBM Watson. Was that
Deep Blue. It was Deep Blue.
Watson's sorry.
Search engine thing.
Yes. Watson won Jeopardy.
Yeah.
It beat Ken Jennings. And then, so, yeah, thank you. It was another one of those IBM ones. And so then that was the bar. And then they're like, well, chess is now too easy. We have to do Go, you know, and then they got it into some real time strategy games like StarCraft and Dota 2. And so, you know, so there's always been this kind of thing that's been a stand in for intelligence. And this has been what the advertisement for, you know, for general intelligence is. And so in addition to what Emily's saying, it's really good at doing this next word thing. I mean, it seems to achieve some acceptable baseline for all these different tasks. But then these tasks become like stand-ins for general intelligence. And it really gives away the game when, you know, people like Mark Zuckerberg, you know, come out and they say, well, Meta's going to work on AGI now. I don't really know what that is, but, you know, we're going to do it.
But you guys seem to like it as investors. And so therefore, that is what we're going to call our thing now.
Yeah. It's literally turning back towards the machine and like dialing up the AGI knob and seeing if the crowd, you know, seems to tear at it. Yeah.
So I think, Emily, you were saying that you were specifically saying that they would take an existing sentence, like one of the training methods, take an existing sentence, cover up a word, computer guesses what that word is, and then compares guess to what the actual word is. And like it got better and better at doing that until it seems like the computer is talking to you using the language a human would use in conversation. Like just hearing it put that way for some reason was like, oh, it's like just better. It's doing the same thing that a chess computer does, but it's just more broadly impressive to people who don't know how to play chess.
So it's not actually doing the same thing that a chess computer does. So what Deep Blue did was they just threw enough computation at to calculate it. What are the outcomes of these moves? What opens up? And you put enough calculation in for chess, that's doable with computers of the era of Deep Blue. Go, it turns out the search space is much bigger. So the AlphaGo, what they did was they actually trained it more like a language model on the sequences of moves in games from really highly rated Go players. Someone beat it recently by playing terribly. Oh, and then it was like, I don't know what to do.
Yeah.
Because it was completely
they're
off
just
the
so crap data. At it. They're like, yeah.
That's why I usually lose at chess, is I'm so much better than everybody that it's just their low level confuses me.
Yeah. So there was a big deal about how GPT-4 could play chess super well. And one of the things about most of the models that are out there right now is we know nothing about their training data, or very little. Like the companies are closed on the training data, even OpenAI, right? But people figured out that there's actually an enormous corpus of highly rated chess players' chess games in the training data in the specific notation for GPT-4. So when it's playing chess, it is doing predict a likely next token based on that part of its training data.
Got it.
But that's not what Deep Blue is up to. Deep Blue is a different strategy. And in all of these cases, there's this idea that like, well, chess is something that smart people do. So if a computer can play chess, that means we've built something really smart, which is ridiculous. And I just want to be very clear that Alex and I aren't saying there's some better way to build AGI.
Right.
We're saying there's better ways to seek out effective automation in our lives. I'm kind of speaking for you there, Alex, but I think we're in agreement.
Yeah, or rather, I mean, even if we want automation in particular parts of our lives, you know, what is the function of making chess robots, right? And, you know, insofar as building chess robots in the Cold War, I mean, a lot of it had to do with, you know, Cold War kind of scientific acumen, you know, the U.S. versus the USSR and seeing if we could do better, you know, and, you know, chess was one front getting to the moon, speaking of, the show, which has already completely evaded me, that we were talking about earlier.
For All Mankind.
For All Mankind. Thank you. Please cut me out. Make me sound smart.
It's a tough title. It doesn't stick in the brain. And right. They should have used AI to name that show.
Yeah,
exactly.
Better title. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's so the historical sexism that makes it stick, or maybe makes it a little bit slippery.
Right.
Yes. Yeah. So it's the same thing, you know, getting to the moon first. So, I mean, this becomes a stand-in, you know, and it's, you know, a lot of it's just frankly kind of chauvinism, you know, mine can do it better than yours and, you know, and really getting to that. And so, you know, this association with chess, as Emily said, of like this thing smart people can seem to do, not things like, is automation useful in these people's lives?
Right.
Will it make these kind of grunt tasks kind of easier for people? Instead, we sort of jumped over that completely to go, let's make this art kind of thing. And, oh, it's going to put out a bunch of, you know, concept artists and writers. Even if it doesn't work well, you know, we're going to scare the wits out of these people who do this for a living.
What's, right. I feel like, you know, looking at CES and just what happened at CES, so many companies like, it's got AI. Like, this thing, this refrigerator's using AI. And I feel like for most people who are just consumers or just kind of passively getting this information, there's like a discrepancy between how it's being marketed and what it is actually doing, right?
Yeah.
And so part of me is like, why are all these C-suite maniacs suddenly being like, dude, this is the future. Like, you got to get in on it. And I know that a lot of it is hype, but can you sort of like help me understand like the hype line or pipeline to how a company says, ooh, this is what we do. And then how that creeps up to the capitalists who are then they're like, yeah, yeah, yeah. What? And then begin to say, like, make these proclamations about what large language models are doing or how it's going to revolutionize things. What's sort of like, because from your perspective, can you just sort of be like, just give us the unfiltered, like, this is how this, like, this conversation is moving from these laboratories into places like Goldman Sachs?
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of hype seems to operate via FOMO. It's honestly, yeah. If you want it, kind of reductive kind of way. Mm-hmm. You need to get in on this at the ground level. If you don't, you're going to be missing out on huge opportunities, huge returns on investment, right?
Mm-hmm.
And one of the ways I would say that AI hype is kind of at least a bit qualitatively different than, let's say, I don't know, crypto or NFTs or,
yeah,
you know,
that's the big one.
Yeah. You know, DeFi, mm-hmm. is that, you know, crypto has kind of shown itself to be such a house of cards that, you know, it takes only a few things like your Sam Bankman-Fried going to jail or, you know, these huge kinds of scandals happening with Binance and Coinbase that, you know, those things. And then it's the wild fluctuation of Bitcoin and other types of crypto that at least you have some kind of proof of concepts on this ChatGPT where it seems like this thing can do a lot. And so there's enough kind of stability in that where folks say, yeah, let's go ahead and get in on this. And if we don't get in on the ground floor, we're missing out on millions or billions of dollars in ROI. And so, you know, this is, you know, but the hype is really at its base, this kind of FOMO element of it. And it's, and I think it's just the thing where, you know, it obscures so much of what's going on under the hood. And folks just think it's magic. You know, you see Gen AI, people say, we're putting Gen AI in this, Gen AI in that, that you could rub it on an engine. When,
just a few drops.
When AI itself, I mean, itself, that kind of calling things AI, I mean, itself has this marketing quality to it. It's really, you know, but if you kind of look at the class of technologies that have been called AI since the inception of AI in the mid-1950s, it can be anything as basic as a logistic regression, which is a very basic statistical method that gets taught in stats, you know, 101 or 201. To, you know, these language models that we see OpenAI hawking. And so you could say AI isn't anything. I've got AI I've programmed by hand. I did the math by hand. Ooh.
Right.
You know.
Right.
Yeah. So I think what's part of what's going on here is that because of the way ChatGPT was set up as a demo, and then all these people did free PR for OpenAI, sort of sharing their screen caps, everybody has this sense that there's a machine that can actually reason right now. And then you call anything else AI, and that the you know, gee whiz factor from ChatGPT sort of like makes the whole thing sparkle. There's a funny story from this conference called NeurIPS, which is Neural Information Processing Systems. Not real neurons. These are the fake ones that these things are built out of. It's like a mathematical function that's sort of an approximation of a 1940s notion of what a neuron is. And a few years back, I want to say
You sound impressed, by the way.
Around 2016, 2017, I think, some folks at NeurIPS did a parody where they put together this pitch deck of a company that was going to build AGI. And it's ridiculous. Like, the pitch deck is basically step three, step three, profit. Like, there's nothing in there. And this was just on the cusp of when AI went from being sort of a joke, like you wouldn't call your work AI if you were serious, to where we are now. And what these people didn't realize when they were doing their pitch deck was that there were some folks in the audience who had already stepped over into that, like, you know, AI true believer, we're going to make a lot of money on this step. People came up and offered them money for their fake company.
That's great. Yeah.
So it's like the .com boom.
Yeah, there's just...
like, what's the company called? Something.com?
Yeah. Yeah.
They're ready for the next thing, right? They've kind of stalled out post iPhone, and they're like ready for the next big thing, whether it's here or not. And so, yeah, the gee-whiz-ification, or like the gee-whiz result from OpenAI and ChatGPT, it feel like they were like, good enough. Let's get this thing going. Let's get this machine cranking out. The idea of describing like the mistakes that ChatGPT makes as hallucinations, like the marketing that's being done across the board here is pretty impressive.
The fact that ChatGPT even uses the word I.
Right.
That's a programming choice that could have been otherwise and would have made things much, much clearer.
Right.
Yeah.
But
ChatGPT is trained on the entire internet.
Not true.
Yeah, that was also something that I had accepted when it first started. I'm like, well, this thing hallucinates and its brain is the entire internet. What could go wrong?
So the thing about the phrase the entire internet is that the internet is not a thing where you can go somewhere and download.
Right.
It is distributed. And so if you are going to collect information from the internet, you have to decide which URLs you're going to visit.
Yeah.
And they aren't all listed in one place.
Right.
So there's no way to say the entire internet. There's some choices happening already.
Yeah.
And what they mean when they say the entire internet, I mean, most of the time they mean most of the English available internet. And I mean, and although they've got some, but then much of the work that has been translated has been actually machine translated from English into another language. So for instance, you know, a bunch of the URLs that they have are from the Google Japanese patents and Common Crawl and the Dodge paper. Yeah, a lot of it's been machine translated from English into Japanese, and it's just available through like Google's Japanese patent site. And so a bunch of this stuff is, you know, just loaded in, and it's, and so I mentioned this data set Common Crawl, which isn't, you know, in the GPT-2 paper, I think they cite it, or is it GPT-3 paper? I think it's a GPT-3 paper.
GPT-3,
and they say, it's the Common Crawl is this data set that they say they use, which is this kind of, what is this weird, like, nonprofit that was collecting a bunch of data that could be useful for some limited scientific inquiry. But then it became, now they've completely rebranded themselves. They're saying, we're the data that, you know, fuels large language models. And Mozilla, the Mozilla Foundation, the folks that also, the corporation makes the web browser Firefox, they did this report on Common Crawl and kind of what's behind it too, and find, you know, the weird idiosyncrasies of it. But yeah, when they say the whole internet, I mean, yeah, it's these curated data sets. You can't get this whole internet. That's just a falsity.
But for our listeners, you can get it from Jack and I. We do have that file. So if you're
it's just one large zip file.
Yeah.
It's just gonna
on your BitTorrent.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
it's on Pirate Bay. Check it out. Yeah.
Yeah.
And we read it every morning to prepare for this show. Just the whole thing.
Just download it.
Yeah. Let's take a quick break and we'll be right back.
You like to watch new stuff, right, Zygang? I know I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new. Because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump. Join Lisa and her hand-selected staff at Chateau Rosabelle, a glamorous estate in the French countryside, as they live, work, and play together 24/7. Vanderpump Villa is where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. And don't miss the new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course. And season 5 promises new horizons for the entire Kardashian clan. And if you're looking for steamy streams, check out Grand Cayman Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set on the tropical Caribbean island of Grand Cayman, where the rich come to play. But be warned, it's a small island. And secrets don't stay secret for long. So come check out what's new on Hulu this month. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
What up? I am Dramos, host of the Life as a Gringo podcast. Now, this is a show for the No Sabo kids, the 200%ers. Here we celebrate your otherness and embrace living in the gray area. If you ever felt like you were always too much this while also never being enough that, this is the podcast for you. Every Tuesday, I'll be bringing you conversations around personal growth, issues affecting the Latin community, and much more via my own personal stories, along with interviews with inspiring thought leaders from our community. Then, every Thursday, I'll be tackling trending stories and current events from our community that you need to know. So much of what makes our community so beautiful is our diversity, yet too often those of us who don't fit into this dumb stereotypical box of whatever it means to be Latino are left without a voice or just forgotten about. On this show, I celebrate the uniqueness of our culture and invite you to walk in your authenticity. Listen to Life as a Gringo as a part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots as I sit down with inspiring women like Misty Copeland, Brooke Shields, Vanessa Hudgens, and so many more. We dive into how these women made their pivot and their mindset shifts that happened as a result. It's a podcast about women, their stories, and how their pivot became their success. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. So, yeah, just in terms of juxtaposing, like what these companies are saying and the mainstream media is buying versus what is actually happening. So I was reminded of Sam Altman telling The New Yorker that he keeps like a bag with cyanide capsules ready to go in case of the AI apocalypse. So, you know, he is an expert who gets billions of dollars richer if people think his technology is so powerful that he's like freaked out by it. So, but that's something that I don't know. I've seen reprinted in like long articles about the danger of AI. And then there's this other like more real world trend where like you talk about a Google engineer who admitted they're not going to use any large language model as part of their family's healthcare journey.
Oh, that was a Google senior vice president. That was
senior vice president.
Very high up, actually. Yes. Or not a senior vice, a Google VP, Greg Corrado, yeah. Who's one of the heads of Google Health itself. Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
And there's also this story from your show has a Fresh Hell segment at the end where you talk about examples, headlines that are just...
It's Fresh Hell.
Yeah, it's just Fresh Hell. It's new versions
of
Hell.
Fresh AI Hell.
Yeah. The one about Duolingo from a recent episode where they're getting rid of human translators, firing them, cutting the workforce, replacing them with translation AI, even though the technology isn't there yet. But the point that you were making on the show is that they're willing to go forward with that because the user base won't notice the difference until they're in Spain and need to get to a hospital and asking for the biblioteca. You know, like it's, yeah. They are specifically an audience who is not going to know how bad the product that they're getting is because they're just like not in a position to know that by the nature of the product. And so just this distinction between being hyped to the mainstream media and like these long read, like New Yorker, Atlantic articles as this is a future that we should be scared of because like it's going to become self-aware and Sam Altman is freaked out. And then what it's actually doing, which is just making everything shittier around us, is I think a big kind of chunk that I took away from your show that was just like, oh yeah, that makes way more sense. That feels much more likely to be how this thing progresses.
Yeah. So the AI doomerism, which is when Altman says, I've got my bug out bag and my cyanide capsules in case the robot apocalypse comes, or when Jeff Hinton, who's you know, credited, has a Turing Award for his work on the specific kind of computer program that's used to gather the statistics that's behind these large language models. He's now concerned that it's on track to becoming smarter than us. And it's going to, like, these piles of linear algebra are not going to combust into consciousness. And anytime someone is like, you know, pointing to that boogeyman, what they're doing is they're basically hiding the actions of the people in the picture who are right. using it to do things like make a shitty language learning product because it's cheaper to do it that way than to pay the people with the actual expertise to do the translations.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's just leading just to, I mean, I like this kind of thought on this. I mean, this kind of process. And Cory Doctorow's got this kind of sister concept of AI hype, which is enshittification, right. which I think the Linguistic Society America, it was their overall...
American Dialect Society. Picked it as the overall word of the year for 2023. Nice. But enshittification is something very specific, right? It's not just like we're now swimming in AI extruded junk, right? Mm-hmm. AI in quotes as always. It's something more. The companies create a platform that you sort of get lured in because initially it's really useful. So this is like, you think about how Amazon was great for finding products. It sucked for your local brick and mortar businesses, but as a consumer, it was super convenient because you could find things. But then the companies basically turn around and they extract all of the value that the customer is getting out of it. And then they turn around to the other parties there, the people trying to sell things, and they extract value out of them. So you start off with this thing that's initially quite useful and usable, and then it gets enshittified in the name of making profits for the platform. And that's like the specific thing about enshittification.
Yeah. And I would say there's some kinds of processes you can think about enshittification, the kind of idea that you have to rush to a certain kind of market, that you have a monopoly on this kind of thing. And I guess, I mean, the thing about large language models, I think that we get on and talk a lot about is that large language models are kind of born shitty with content. So it's not like the platform started and that platform monopoly led to this kind of process of enshittification. It's more like you decided to make a tool that is a really good word prediction machine and you use it for a substitute for places in which people are meant to be speaking kind of with their own tone, with their own voice, with their own forms and their own
with their own expertise.
And so it's kind of, it's born shitty. And so, you know, this kind of thing, I think, is really helpful. It makes me think of kind of a thing I think I saw a few times on Twitter where people are like, well, if you're an expert in any of these fields and you read content by large language models, you actually know anything about this, you're going to know that it's absolute bullshit, right? You know, if you ask it to write you a short, you know, treatise on, I don't know, sociological methodology, something specific that I know a little bit about, it's going to be absolute bullshit, right? But good enough to computer engineers and, you know, higher ups at these companies.
Yeah.
So here's an example. The other day, I came across an article that supposedly quoted me out of this publication from India called Bihar Prabha. And I'm like, I never said those words. I could see how someone might think I would. Right. And then I searched my emails like, no, I never corresponded with any journalists at this outfit. So I wrote to them. I said, fabricated quote, please take it down. and print a retraction, which they did. And they wrote back and said, oh, yeah, that actually we prompted some large language model to create that article for us and posted it.
Yes, because it seems like you might have. And the large language models, they don't like that. Isn't that what hallucinations are a lot of the time, is just the large language model making up stuff it seems like is what the person wants them to say? Yeah,
exactly. But here's the whole thing. Every single thing output from a large language model has that property. It's just that sometimes it seems to make sense.
The whole thing is trying to do a trick of like predict, I figured out what you wanted me to say. Ha ha. But it's like, well, but what I wanted you to say is not always, that's not how I want my questions answered. That's actually a wildly flawed way of coming up, like answering people. It's definitely something that I do in my day-to-day life because I'm scared of conflict and a people pleaser, but that's not, I'm not a good scientific instrument for that reason, you know? Like, but,
you just got to, you just an avoidant attachment style, which as another avoidant.
They've just made me a scientific model. That's terrible.
Like, you know, I can't believe this.
I was like, I don't know if you saw that headline where Tyler Perry was like, I was going to open an $800 million studio, but I stopped the second I saw what Sora, this video generative AI, could do. And I realized we're in trouble. He said, quote, I had no idea until I saw recently the demonstrations of what it's able to do. It's shocking to me. And he's basically saying, he's like, you could make a pilot and save millions of dollars. This is going to have all kinds of ramifications. That feels like half like just ignorance, because this person's like, oh my God, I don't know what, like total wow factor, but also maybe hype. But I'm also curious, from your perspective, what are the actual dangers that we're facing, that, you know, because right now I think everything is just all about, these are the jobs it's going to take. I think in the LLM episode where the LLM predicted what the potential of LLMs were and the jobs that it could take in a very...
GPT's paper was so ridiculous.
Yeah, oh my gosh, where it's like, huh? You know, like just sort of the unethical nature of how even these companies are doing research and creating data to support this.
Can we just stop, Miles? And like explain exactly what the methodology of that paper was?
No, please. I will allow the experts to do it, because it's absolutely bonkers to hear, because any person who's like been at any, like tried to look at a study or something, and you look at methodology, like,
So methodology is a very kind term for what was in that paper.
Yeah,
truly.
So, Alex, did you want to summarize real quick what was in? There was two different things we were looking at.
Yeah.
There was something that came out of OpenAI and something from Goldman Sachs. And the Goldman Sachs one was silly, but not as silly as the OpenAI one.
Yeah, I mean, getting in the details, and I went through this, and I puzzled this paper. I like poked my friend who's a labor sociologist. I'm like, what the hell is going on here? And, you know, okay, so there's this kind of metric that you can use to judge how hard a task is that the government collects. And there's this kind of job classification. They rate them from, you know, 1 to 7, effectively. And so what Goldman Sachs said was, well, basically anything from 1 to 4, probably a machine can do. And you're like, okay, that's kind of silly. That's huge assumptions there. I understand, though, as a researcher, you have to make some assumptions when you don't have great data. But what OpenAI did is that they asked two entities what could be automated. They asked one, other OpenAI employees, hey, what jobs do you think could be automated? Already hilarious, because, you know, they're you know, pretty inclined.
They're not doing those jobs, right?
Yeah, they're not doing those jobs. They're pretty primed to think that their technology is great. And then they asked GPT-4 itself, they prompted and say, hey, can we automate these jobs? So, you know, and so
you'll never guess what the answer was.
You'll never guess.
They took the output of that as if it were data.
Yeah.
And
then,
like, you know, these ridiculous graphs and blah, blah, blah. And it's just like the whole thing is fantasy.
Yeah. Right. So, so is the danger there just sort of this reliance? Like, I guess, so if we're classifying the sort of threats to our sense of like how information is distributed or what is real or what is hype or whatever, or if they're actually taking jobs, what is something that I think people actually need to be aware of or to sort of prepare themselves for how this is going to disrupt things in a way that, you know, isn't necessarily the end of the world, but definitely changing things for the worse?
There's a whole bunch of things. And the one that I'm sort of most going on about these days is threats to the information ecosystem. Mm-hmm. So I want to talk about that. But there's also things like automated decision systems being used by governments to decide who gets social benefits and who gets them yanked, right? Mm-hmm. Things like Dr. Joy Bullen-Winney worked with a group of people in, I want to say, New York City, who were pushing back against having a face recognition system installed as their like entry system. So they were going to be continuously surveilled because the company who owned the house that they lived in, or maybe it was a, I'm not sure if it was government, it was
apartment,
housing or not.
Apartment complex. Yeah.
Wanted to basically use biometrics as a way to have them gain entry to their own homes, right, where they lived. So there's dangers of like lots and lots of different kinds. The one that's maybe closest to what we've been talking about, though, is these dangers to the information ecosystem, where you now have this synthetic media, like that news article I was talking about before, being posted as if it were real, mm-hmm. without any watermarks, without anything that either a person can look at and say, I know that's fake. Like, I knew because it was my name and I knew I didn't say that thing, right?
Right.
But somebody else wouldn't have. And there's also not a machine-readable watermarking in there, so you can just filter it out. And this stuff goes and goes. So there was, a few months ago, someone posted a fake mushroom foraging guide that they had created using a large language model to Amazon as a self-published book. Right? So then it's just up there as a book.
Yeah.
Right. And coming back around to Sora, those videos, like, they look impressive at first glance, but then just like Alex was saying about the art having this sort of facile style to it, there's similar things going on in the videos. But still, like, it should be watermarked. It should be obvious that you're looking at something fake. And right. what OpenAI has done is they've put this tiny little faint thing down the lower right-hand corner that looks like some sort of readout from a sensor going up and down, and then it swirls into the OpenAI logo. And it's faint, and it's in the same spot that Twitter puts the button for turning the sound on and off. So it's hidden by that, if you're seeing these things on Twitter. Wow. And it's completely opaque, right? If you are not in the know, if you don't know what OpenAI is, if you don't know that fake videos might exist, that doesn't tell you anything.
Right.
So these are the things I'm worried about.
And the things I'm really worried about is, you know, these things doing a pretty terrible job at producing written content and videos mm-hmm. and images. And so it's not that they could replace a human person, but it just takes a boss or a VP to think that it's good enough.
Right.
And then this replaces whole classes of occupations. So again, talking to Carla Ortiz, who's a concept artist. She's done work for Marvel and DC and huge studios and Magic the Gathering. And, you know, and she's basically saying after Midjourney Stability AI produces this incredibly crappy content, jobs for concept artists have really dried up. They've gone and it's really hard. And I mean, especially for folks who are just breaking into the industry, who might just be trying to get their you know, their work out there for entry-level jobs, they can't find anything right now. And so imagine what that's going to replace, what that's going to encroach on, right? I mean, that's kind of unique thing about kind of creative fields and coding fields and whatnot. And then I would say this automated decision-making kind of in government and hiring, I mean, those are, you know, deathly, you know, terrifying, right? And I mean, this is already being deployed. I mean, at the U.S.-Mexico border, there's kind of mass. The Mark have actually just put out this interview with David Moss, who's at the Electronic Freedom Foundation. No, either the Electronic Freedom Foundation. I think he's at the ACLU. I have to look this up. But it's basically a survey of like surveillance technology that's at the southern border. And Dave Moss is at EFF. The Mark down published something about with him. It was like a virtual reality tour of CERN's technology or something wild like that.
I was going to say, there's also things like ShotSpotter, which purports to be able to detect when a gun has been fired. Yeah. And this has been deployed by police departments all over the country. And there's, you know, there's no transparency into how it was evaluated or how it even works or why you should believe it works. And so what we have is a system that tells the cops that they're running into an active shooter situation, which is definitely a recipe for reducing police violence, right? Jesus,
right. Yeah. Right.
Powered by Microsoft. Yeah.
And there was a recent investigation into that showed that it's always, almost always used in neighborhoods.
Yeah. It's a communities of color. Yeah. The wired piece on that. Basically, I think they said about, 70% of the census tracts? Something ridiculous like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's absurd. And then there's things like Epic, which is a healthcare, electronic health records company. is partnering with Microsoft to push this synthetic text into so many different systems so that you're going to get like reports in your patient records that were automatically generated and supposedly checked by a doctor who doesn't have time to check it thoroughly.
Right.
And they're going to be doing things like, you know, randomly putting in information about BMI when it's not even relevant, or misgendering people all over the place, or, you know, this kind of stuff is going to hurt.
Yeah.
And I wanted to add to the issue of like entry-level jobs drying up for people who do, for example, illustration. Dr. Joy Bolognini points out that we're getting what's called an apprentice gap, where those positions where the easy stuff gets automated. And I don't think this is just in creative fields, but the positions where you're doing the easy stuff and you're learning how to master it and you are working alongside someone who's doing the harder stuff, if that gets replaced by automation, then it becomes harder to train the people to do the stuff that requires expertise.
Right.
Yeah. And it's easier to do in creative fields because there's such a just inability for executives to, you know, like they don't know it. They've never known anything about like what is quality creative work. So I feel like it's much easier for them to just be like, yeah, get rid of that. And we'll, like the way that we'll find out about that isn't working is the quality of the creative output will be far worse.
Right. I mean, all those folks really tend to care about are, you know, content and engagement metrics. You know, you can't actually have something that's kind of known for quality or creativity, right? Yeah. And it does remind me a little bit about kind of, you know, the first rebels against automation, the Luddites, and, you know, the kind of way in which they did have this apprentice guild system in which they trained for, you know, a decade or so before they could, you know, perhaps go ahead and open their own shop in a way that, you know, those folks were replaced by these water frames that were, they're called water frames because they were produced by hydraulic power, but then, you know, effectively powered by unskilled people and by unskilled, usually children.
Yeah.
Doing incredibly dangerous work. But yeah, folks that had been training for this, the apprentices were incredibly steaming mad.
Yeah. And then we made their name a synonym for like dummy
and a hater.
Hater. Yeah.
Yeah.
Tech hater.
Not canary in the coal mine.
But there's been some nice efforts to reclaim them by Brian Merchant and Gavin Mueller and some folks. Yeah.
So just in the comparison to crypto, it feels like the adoption here, the hype cycle here is more widespread than crypto. Like with crypto, there was that moment where we saw the person behind the curtain who was, you know, the people, that there was the fall of crypto. With AI, I don't feel like there is any incentive for anyone to, any of the stakeholders, I guess
you'd say, you got us
involved to, to just come out and be like, yeah, it was bullshit. You know, there's just so much buy-in across the board. Where, I guess we've already talked about where you see this going, but is there, do you think there's any hope for this getting kind of found out, the truth catching on? Or do you think it's just going to have to be 100 years from now when somebody changes their mind about AI haters and is like, actually, they were onto something the way we are about Luddites?
We're still trying. That's what we're up to with the podcast, right? And a lot of our other public scholarship. There was an interesting moment last week when ChatGPT sort of glitched and was outputting nonsense. Yes. I mean, was it actually Spanglish or were people just calling it that because it had some Spanish in it?
It had some, it wasn't all, I mean, it was doing some Spanglish stuff, but the stuff is just even more inscrutable than usual. It was just completely nonsense. Yeah.
Yeah. And that, the sort of OpenAI statement about what went wrong basically described it for what it is. They had to like say something other than what they usually say. And then there was a whole thing with Google's image generator, which, you know, the baseline thing is super duper biased and like makes everybody look like white people. And there's this wonderful thread on Medium. And here I'm doing the thing where I can't think of a person's name, but it's a wonderful post on Medium where someone goes through this thread of pictures that I think were initially on Reddit, where someone asked one of these generators to create warriors from different cultures taking a selfie, and they're all doing the American selfie smile. Mm. And so this is really uncanny valley thing going on there, where these people from all these different cultures are posing the way Americans pose.
Right.
So huge bias in these things underlyingly. Google has some kind of a patch that basically whatever prompt you put in, they add some additional prompting to make the people look diverse. And then last week or so, someone figured out that if you asked it to show you a painting of Nazi soldiers, they're not all white because of this patch in there, right?
Right, right.
So
make it diverse.
Right. Yeah. So Google's backpedaling of that, I think, was ridiculous. There was some statement in there about how they certainly don't intend for their system to put out historically inaccurate images.
Right.
I'm like, what the hell? It's a fake image. Right. It's not like there's no accuracy there no matter what. Right.
Right.
But
right.
These mishaps maybe sort of pulled back the curtain for a broader group of people. There's some true believers out there who are not going to be reached.
Sure.
But I think it may have helped for some slice of society.
Yeah. I know some people who are like, how do we know that Reinhard Heydrich didn't have dreadlocks? I think it's pretty clear.
Gosh, yeah.
Wow. But okay. Sure. Go off.
Yeah. And I mean, I think this is such an interesting question, right? Is like, when is the AI bubble going to pop, right? And I mean, in some ways, it feels like, you know, as much as we can do, we're kind of prodding it, right? Mm-hmm. saying, you know, and one thing that I offhandedly said one time and Emily loves is ridicule as praxis. So, you know, one thing, you know, and I will, in a turn, one of Emily's great quotes is, you know, now I'm going to mess it up right now. It's the refuse to be impressed.
Resist the urge to be impressed.
It's much better when she says it. And it's kind of the idea of like, some of it is a bit of the sheen, right? But it feels like at some point, you know, if in the kind of operations of these things, you know, there'll be enough buy-in, especially with automation, that's hard to reverse a lot of the automation without just a huge fight. And so, I mean, I think something that helps are, you know, worker-led efforts, you know, and one of the most awesome things that we've seen, this is something a scholar, Blair Atair-Frost, calls AI counter-governance. She calls, and one example she is the WGA strike. And how folks struck for 148 days. And after the strike, they not only got a bunch of new kinds of guarantees for minimum pay when it came to streaming and the residuals they get for it, they also, you know, have to basically be informed if any AI is being used in the writer's room.
Yeah.
They can't be forced to edit or re-edit or rewrite AI-generated content. Everything has to be basically above board. I mean, it isn't as far as it could have gone and banned it outright.
Right.
But if there's any use of it, it has to be disclosed and you can't bring in these tools to whole cloth replace a writer's room.
Yeah. Well, Alex and Emily, it has been such a pleasure having you on the show. I feel like we could keep talking about this
for hours, for days.
But thank you so much for coming on. And yeah, I would love to have you back. Where can people find you, follow you, hear your podcast, all that good stuff?
Yeah. So the podcast is called Mystery AI Hype Theater 3000. And you can find it anywhere fine podcasts are streamed. And we're also on PeerTube if you prefer that kind of content as video. So we start off as Twitch and then show up that way. I'm on all the socials. I tend to be Emily M. Bender. So Twitter or Blue Sky. On Mastodon, I'm Emily M. Bender @DareInstitute.social. And I'm very findable on the web, very Googleable at the University of Washington. How about you, Alex?
Yeah. And if you want to catch the Twitch stream, it's twitch.tv/Dare_Institute. Usually on Mondays, usually this time slot. So next week we'll be here. I forget. We'll be here eventually.
Yeah, today's Tuesday, though, in PDZ land.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, it's actually not. So Mondays, check us out. You can catch me at Twitter and Blue Sky, Alex Hanna, no H at the end. And then, yeah, our Mastodon server, dare-community.social. What else? I think those are all the socials we have.
Yeah, amazing. Is there a work of media that you've been enjoying?
So I am super excited about Dr. Joy Bulamuni's book, Unmasking AI. Came out last Halloween. It is a beautiful sort of combination memoir slash introduction into the world of how so-called AI works, how policymaking is done around it, how activism is done around it. And I actually got to interview her here in Seattle at the University of Washington last week, which was amazing.
Nice. How about you, Alex?
Yeah, I'd recommend the podcast Worlds Beyond Number. And it is a Dungeons and Dragons live play, actual play podcast that is put together by Brennan Lee Mulligan, Abria Iyengar, Lou Wilson, and Erica Ishii, talking about writing that is not generated by AI, but generated by some very talented improv comedians and storytellers themselves.
But how does it scale? How do you scale?
Oh my God. It is actually surprising. I mean, that podcast is actually, I think, the single most funded thing on Patreon. Broke a bunch of records for it. It's got about 40,000 subscribers. People want good content.
Yeah.
It's not just humans. High art, you know? Yeah. People want this vibrant storytelling, amazing creation, you know? And so the more we can plug that stuff, the better.
By the way, you can also find Mystery AI Hype Theater 3000, like where podcasts are. So in case you don't do Twitch. Yeah. Like I was listening on, you know, Spotify or whatever.
You weren't on Twitch, Jack?
I wasn't on Twitch this weekend. I was taking a break, you know? It was just like too much Twitch.
Couldn't get a hype train on?
That's right.
Okay. All right.
Miles, where can people find you? What's working media you've been enjoying?
At the @base platforms, @ Miles of Gray. Also, if you like the NBA, you can hear Jack and I just go on and on about that on our other podcast, Miles and Jack Got Mad Boosties. And if you like trash reality TV like me, I comfort myself with it. Check me out on 420 Day Fiancé, where we talk about 90 Day Fiancé. A tweet I like, this is just kind of... It's a historical day, I would have to say, for the internet. We missed an anniversary on Sunday, apparently. The very famous clip of Peter Weber, the bowler, who won and came out with the iconic phrase, Who do you think you are? I am. That had its 12th anniversary. And I'll play that audio because it's one of our favorites. Here we go. All right. Who do you think you are?
Point to himself with his thumb. Who do you think you are?
Oh, man.
The whole thing is good, also. The run-up to that is great. That's right. I did it. God damn it. What?
Sure, man.
I play an amateur sport, and just like the exhilaration you get, and you just say anything.
Yeah, exactly. I
love that clip.
I respect it so much.
Who do you think you are? It's like, you've glory fried your brain circuits, and now that's what you're saying. the other one from @thedarkprowler. It's a screenshot of an Uber notification on the phone. It says, "Young Stroker, the body snatcher, will be joining you along your route. You're still on schedule to arrive by 7:54 or earlier." Okay.
By the way, can I get those chicken nuggets glory fried? Thanks.
Yeah.
That'd be great.
Oh, yeah.
Tweet I've been enjoying. Caitlin at Kate Holes tweeted, "Overnight oats sounds like the name of a racehorse who sucks." that was an old one. That was apparently September 25th, 2022. Oh.
So. Good one. Banger.
You can find me on Twitter at @Jack_O'Brien. You can find us on Twitter at Daily Zeitgeist. We're at The Daily Zeitgeist on Instagram. We have a Facebook fan page and a website, dailyzeitgeist.com, where we post our episodes and our footnotes, where we link off to the information that we talked about in today's episode, as well as a song that we think you might enjoy. Miles, is there a song that you think people might enjoy?
This is just a nice little instrumental clip, not clip, a full-on track from a London-based producer. It goes by Vegan, V-E-G-Y-N, and the track is called "A Dream Goes On Forever." And it's a super dreamy track. It's just kind of an interesting production. So maybe, just check out some Midjourney, images, some Sora AI videos, and just blast this in your headphones. Just kind of go on for
or
"A Dream Goes
go
On
for
Forever."
Go for the music and leave the synthetic media out of it.
Just fully embrace.
Listen to the music, close your eyes, and actually the Midjourney images that your brain will
Whoa.
I've found that like at night when I sleep, sometimes my brain produces Sora images.
This is like, you sound like a youth pastor talking to kids about God, or it's like, you know, it's really, the AI is actually up in here, kids.
Yeah.
Down here. Really want to get it. Yeah, that's, exactly. That's what you want to be down with. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The real training data we had is the word of God.
Exactly.
That's the only one I need. Yeah. Well, the Daily Zeitgeist is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. That is going to do it for us this morning. We are back this afternoon to tell you what is trending, and we'll talk to you all then. Bye.
Bye.
Zeit gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. A new season of The Kardashians starring The Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
What up? I am Dramos, host of the Life as a Gringo podcast. This is a show for the No Sabo kids, the 200%ers. Here we celebrate your otherness and embrace living in the gray area. Every Tuesday, I'll be bringing you conversations around personal growth, issues affecting the Latin community, and much more. Then every Thursday, I'll be tackling trending stories and current events from our community. Listen to Life as a Gringo on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.